Narcissists are known to dish out random seeming punishments. This is part of what we call the hot and cold game, where these periods of warmth, love, connection, emotional reward mixed in with these cold moments of emotional punishment, be it a cold shoulder, distance, angry outburst, some sort of punishment for behavior that specifically doesn't make any sense to the receiver, to the victim. Nowadays, pop psychology is pretty quick to put people in boxes of, okay, this is a disorder. But what I think is a deeper and more interesting question is, why does this work? Like, why does this work as a manipulation technique? If it's a really an irrational punishment, why do people put up with it? Why does it actually cause people to love the punisher even more? So to dig into this, we're going to look at one of my favorite scenes from The Sopranos where this is done intentionally. For context, this is later in the series. Tony's the boss of the family, and he was diagnosed with cancer earlier in the season, so he's physically weaker. He's starting to notice that the guys in his crew maybe are respecting him a little bit less because of this. He had recently hired a young bodyguard who's physically strong, who looks up to Tony and loves Tony. But the fact that he needs a bodyguard makes him look a little bit weak. And earlier in this episode, he was speaking to his therapist, Dr. Melfi, who was trying to get him to look at maybe he had an insecure male ego as the alpha male of the group. Tony hears what she says and interprets it a little bit differently, as we'll see in the scene. Let's watch. Moment. Moment. Next. As the guys in the room. This is so well done. This is actually all wordless. Picking up the bicep size. This is good.
What's your fucking problem?
Huh?
What the fuck is your problem? Slamming the goddamn refrigerator door.
What? No.
What, are you gonna argue with me now?
Well, I didn't even open the refrigerator. The Coke was out on the counter.
So you are gonna argue with me? Huh? You fucking mutt.
Look, Tony, I don't wanna...
You don't wanna what? You don't wanna what? This fucking guy, huh? Fucking Philadelphia lawyer.
Oh, oh, oh,
oh, oh.
Jesus. Don't do it!
No, don't do it!
My arm!
How's that, huh? You got anything else to say?
See, full agreement, even though it's a shocking situation, full agreement with the bystanders. In this moment, it's just brilliant acting. The moment of recognition. All right. We'll end there because he pukes one more time. But he took the risk and it paid off, right? So the scene is so fascinating because it wasn't some random, unconscious, trauma-driven emotional outburst, right? This was done very consciously. This was done with a clear purpose, with intention. You know, Tony was taking a calculated risk and it paid off, which is why you have this moment of recognition in the mirror. Tony was tapping into some wisdom about human psychology and that doing something like this would actually get people to follow him and respect him more and actually bring stability to the dominance hierarchy with him, of course, at the top. But again, goes back to the question, why does this work? Why in a room full of alpha males in their own right and witnessing their leader do something totally unreasonable, totally unfair. Why do they put up with it? Why is this okay? And why does it actually make them want to follow him more? Now, you could say this is just how the mafia works. They have codes. They have all of these, you know, built-in rules into their culture. You know, other people have analyzed that Tony specifically picked on a physically strong guy, but who wasn't a made man, right? There's different rules if you were to randomly punch out a made man. That's all true. But even those cultural norms are built on primal behavior systems. And even though this is an extreme example, right? A setting that most of us won't directly relate to, this dynamic you see in all different sorts of situations. Again, with the relationship where someone's dating a narcissist and puts up with the hot, cold, random emotional punishments. You see this in the military and basic training. Like when I was in OCS for the Marines, one of the things that was most challenging for me, honestly, and I was coming from a very, you know, liberal, pretty soft background, but it was the fact that we would get these emotional punishments. We'd get yelled at, we'd have to do push-ups, we'd essentially get punished for rules that I didn't know existed, right? And for me, it just didn't compute with my very non-hierarchical, you know, liberal background. Why would we get yelled at for things we didn't know? But in the military, it's extremely important to have a very strong hierarchy. So they have to kind of, you know, beat this into you in basic training. Because all of this taps into a very primal part of human social psychology, where essentially all power dynamics run off of the parent-child template. So for example, my daughter is 1.5. She's walking now. And when we're walking, I give her a lot of freedom. I let her walk, you know, freely on the sidewalk, explore, whatever. But if she goes anywhere near the road, or even walks in the direction of the road, I make a sound of disapproval. Go, or something where she knows, like, I do not want her going that direction. And even though you might not call this a punishment, right? Like, I'm not harming her. She does have, you know, it's, if you observe, she has kind of what looks like a pain response. Like, she kind of gets startled and she's like, oh crap. She doesn't know what she did wrong. All she knows is that daddy doesn't want her to walk in this direction. So she's going to go back. But she doesn't know why, right? She doesn't know that there are cars on asphalt and there's not cars on concrete. And that's why. All she knows is that, you know, dad wants her to be in one area and not in another area. And this is an evolved survival mechanism. We all had this as children. We evolved to modify our behavior in accordance with our parents' approval, because if we didn't, we would have gotten ourselves killed as children. Therefore, this behavior didn't persist, because obviously a small child doesn't have the cognitive capacity to know where the actual danger lies. So all of us were children once. All of us have this, you know, templated behavior within us to not only tolerate what may seem like random punishments, random disapproval from our authority figure, but to in some way actually appreciate it, or to in some way even trust our authority figure more when they're maybe directing us, sometimes in a harsh way, but directing us in ways that we don't understand, right? My daughter doesn't need to know that there's cars in the street, because that's more than her brain can handle at that stage of development. All she needs, and it's actually a very effective survival strategy, evolved strategy, is to use my approval, use her parents' approval as a proxy for navigating the world. You could even see this in the clip, right? In this first moment of confusion, when he first stands up, like, I don't know what's going on. You can see he's standing up almost as a child. And you know, if you've watched the series, you know that he had kind of already this father-son relationship with Tony. Again, brilliant acting, you know, brilliant display via the writing. Because again, it shows this, you know, primal feeling of, this is totally unreasonable, but I really just don't want you to disapprove of me, right? There's that underlying piece there. And this is how mammalian social hierarchies work. We have evolved to contain someone who depends on us in some way, and also to be contained. And you can see this at every level of the human experience, right? Even with little kids, right? They seem to get something out of either bossing around or caring for even smaller kids or babies. You know, obviously, adult parents do this literally with their children, but also the parents take on this child role with someone based on the type of society they're in, right? In a tribe, the chief kind of acts as a parent of all the adults, or the shaman, or the priest, or the pope, or the president of the obviously much more complex modern society. And you can even see this in, you know, in spiritual, you know, among spiritual people, where simply the phrase that you often hear Christians say, God works in mysterious ways. right? It's again based on this kind of psychology of the ultimate father figure, the ultimate authority to me, does things that don't make sense to me, but I trust as part of a bigger plan, right? This is the same kind of pattern that a toddler has of, I don't know why dad gets upset when I move into the street. There's probably a bigger purpose. I'm just going to do what keeps his approval, which is, you know, again, evolved strategy to stay alive, essentially. So this is why I tend to push against the quick labeling of disorders, because even if you look at an extreme example of this, right, like the classic domestic abuse relationship, where a generation ago, people would often pathologize the victim, usually a woman in a situation, like, why is she staying with this guy who beats her? Why is she in love with this guy who beats her? And they would say, oh, well, you know, she's got some sort of trauma. She's got this pathology, daddy issues, Stockholm syndrome, right? Different kinds of ways of justifying or explaining the irrational behavior. Not to say that any of that's false. Nowadays, in the 2020s, the shift in our culture seems to be more towards the perpetrator in certain situations. So they would say the guy is a narcissist. He's got his own traumas. He, you know, he's sharing his pain, you know, hurt people, whatever the justification is there. But really, and even though this is obviously an extreme example where all of those things are true, right? Trauma does cause people to act in ways that are beyond what's good, beyond diminishing returns. You know, if you look at substance addiction, for example, you know, the difference between, you know, a classic addict versus a non-addict is that while the non-addict will recognize when he's full or recognize when, you know, consuming more would be more painful than pleasurable, right? Another drink is actually not going to feel good. Another cupcake is actually going to make me feel worse than the mouth pleasure of the sugar or whatever. Whereas an addict has the hungry ghost experience, they keep consuming. Narcissism is a similar way. What actually is a disorder, we can say, is similar to addiction, where they never quite get full of control, of power, of adoration. Actually, I met a guy who a long time ago dated the founder of the cult I was in, the cult leader, my former cult leader. And he said, and this is, he alleges this, he said that when they were on a date, she said, I'm so in need of validation that the only thing that'll satisfy me is starting a cult. 15 years later, that's exactly what she did. But the deeper point is, just like substance addiction runs on important desire circuits, right? Dopamine circuits, whatever, right? It's just taken to an extreme. We could say that the disorder part of a narcissist victim dynamic still runs on important parts of social psychology, working off of a parent-child template. Because if you look at it again from an evolutionary perspective on like a larger scale, say on a tribal scale, someone does need to be the chief. Someone needs to have enough desire for power, some sort of internal reward where they'll seek power and seek control and seek autonomy or control over others beyond a common desire for human autonomy, let's say. Now, it's easy to label this as a disorder because whether it's trauma-informed or not, most people don't have this intense desire or enough appetite, if you will, to have control over other people. As Joe Rogan says, you have to be kind of crazy to even want to be president. So I would argue, and this might be controversial, that narcissistic behavior in itself is an evolved strategy. And maybe more controversial, we have evolved to expect it, to some degree at least, from our leaders, because that's what a child expects from its parent. And I'd even go further to say that it's not only an evolved strategy for the narcissist themselves, who gets a lot of benefit from seeking power, right? You could argue that all the great conquerors of history, Alexander the Great, Genghis Khan, Napoleon, must have had this trait, right? They had a desire for power, control, and conquest far beyond the average man. We expect it because we want someone to do this. We want to be part of the Mongol tribe that gets to basically ride Genghis Khan's ambition to, you know, greater material abundance. We expect someone to have this massive vaulting ambition. And there's various modern applications of this. Whether we like him as a person or not, or think he's pleasant or not, we all do want someone who's nutty enough who wants to put his own rockets into space, right? And even though he's doing things that maybe seem eccentric to many, if he succeeds, all of humanity will likely benefit from it. So of course, this is not to justify any kind of antisocial behavior, but it's maybe to help you recognize if when you're in a power position, you notice you sometimes dish out random punishments, whether they're direct or just an emotional reaction. When you're maybe in a literal parenting situation, I think a lot of actual parents will sometimes resort to this specifically when they're overwhelmed, or in romantic relationships, maybe you're the more avoidant one. You give a cold shoulder when you're overwhelmed. You don't necessarily mean to. It's just simply to help you recognize there's an evolutionary purpose as to why this behavior pattern exists. And if you're on the receiving end of narcissistic behavior, especially if you have a pattern with attracting narcissists or being attracted to narcissists and drawing out narcissistic behavior in people, is to recognize there's also something in you, right? As undesirable as this behavior is, it does fit in or lock into a behavioral template of the person on the receiving end, the more, you know, child archetype, if you will. But of course, the biggest takeaway of all of this is don't ever slam the refrigerator door.